8. A powerful lie. That moment notwithstanding, I can honestly say this book has been brewing in me since my youth. From Oathbringer, Preface. Shallan drew. She scraped her drawing pad with agitated, bold streaks. She twisted the charcoal stick in her fingers every few lines, seeking the sharpest points to make the lines a deep black. Pattern said from near her calves, where he adorned her skirt like embroidery. Shallan. She kept drawing, filling the page with black strokes. Shallan, Pattern asked. I understand why you hate me, Shallan. I did not mean to help you kill your mother, but it is what I did. It is what I did. Shallan set her jaw and kept sketching. She sat outside at Urethiru, her back against a cold chunk of stone, her toes frigid, cold spren growing up like spikes around her. Her frazzled hair whipped past her face in a gust of air, and she had to pin the paper of her pad down with her thumbs, one trapped in her left sleeve. Shallan, Pattern said. It's all right, Shallan said in a hushed voice, as the wind died down. Just let me draw. Pattern said. A powerful lie. A simple landscape. She should be able to draw a simple, calming landscape. She sat on the edge of one of the 10 Oathgate platforms, which rose 10 feet higher than the main plateau. Earlier in the day, she'd activated this Oathgate, bringing forth a few hundred more of the thousands who were waiting at Narak. That would be it for a while. Each use of the device used an incredible amount of stormlight. Even with the gemstones that the newcomers had brought, there wasn't much to go around. Plus, there wasn't much of her to go around. Only an active full night radiant could work the control buildings at the center of each platform, initiating the swap. For now, that meant only Shallan. It meant she had to summon her blade each time. The blade she'd used to kill her mother. A truth she'd spoken as an ideal of her order of radiance. A truth that she could no longer therefore stuff into the back of her mind and forget. Just draw! The city dominated her view. It stretched impossibly high, and she struggled to contain the enormous tower on the page. Yasna had searched this place out in the hope of finding books and records here of ancient date. So far they hadn't found anything like that. Instead, Shallan struggled to understand the tower. If she locked it down into a sketch, would she finally be able to grasp its incredible size? She couldn't get an angle from which to view the entire tower, so she kept fixating on the little things. The balconies, the shapes of the fields, the cavernous openings. Maws to engulf, consume, overwhelm. She ended up with a sketch, not of the tower itself, but instead a crisscrossing of lines on a field of softer charcoal. She stared at the sketch, a wind spren passing and troubling the pages. She sighed, dropping her charcoal into her satchel and getting out a damp rag to wipe her freehand fingers. Down on the plateau, soldiers ran drills. The thought of them all living in that place disturbed Shallan, which was stupid. It was just a building, but it was one she couldn't sketch. Shallan, Pattern said. We'll work it out, she said, eyes forward. It's not your fault my parents are dead. You didn't cause it. You can hate me, Pattern said. I understand. Shallan closed her eyes. She didn't want him to understand. She wanted him to convince her she was wrong. She needed to be wrong. I don't hate you, Pattern, Shallan said. I hate the sword. But the sword isn't you. The sword is me, my father, the life we led, and the way it got twist it all about. I, Pattern hummed softly. I don't understand. I'd be shocked if you did, Shallan thought. Because I sure don't. Fortunately, she had a distraction coming her way in the form of a scout, climbing up the ramp to the platform where Shallan perched. The dark-eyed woman wore white and blue, with trousers beneath a runner's skirt, and had long, dark, alethy hair. Brightness Radiant? The scout asked after bowing. The High Prince has requested your presence. Bother, Shallan said, while inwardly relieved to have something to do. She handed the scout her sketchbook to hold while she packed up her satchel. Dun spheres, she noted. While three of the High Princes had joined Dalinar on his expedition to the center of the Shattered Plains, the greater number had remained behind. When the unexpected high storm had come, Hatham had received word via Spanreed from scouts out along the plains. His war camp had been able to get out most of their spheres for recharging before the storm hit, giving him a huge amount of stormlight compared to the rest of them. He was becoming a wealthy man, as Dalinar traded for infused spheres to work the Oathgate and bring in supplies. Compared to that, providing spheres to her to practice her light weaving wasn't a terrible expense, but she still felt guilty to see that she'd drained two of them by consuming stormlight to help her with the chill air. She'd have to be careful about that. She got everything packed, then reached back for the sketchbook and found the scout woman flipping through the pages with wide eyes. Brightness, she said. These are amazing. Several were sketches as if looking up from the base of the tower, catching a vague sense of Urethiru's stateliness, but more giving a sense of vertigo. With dissatisfaction, Shallan realized she'd enhanced the surreal nature of the sketches with impossible vanishing points and perspective. I've been trying to draw the tower, Shallan said, but I can't get it from the right angle. Maybe when Brightlord Brooding Eyes returned, he could fly her to another peak along the mountain chain. I've never seen anything like these, the scout said, flipping pages. What do you call it? Surrealism, Shallan said, taking the large sketchbook back and tucking it under her arm. It was an old artistic movement. I guess I defaulted to it when I couldn't get the picture to look how I wanted. Hardly anyone bothers with it anymore except students. It made my eyes make my brain think it forgot to wake up. Shallan gestured, and the scout led the way back down and across the plateau. Here, Shallan noticed that more than a few soldiers on the field had stopped their drills and were watching her. Bother! She would never again return to being just Shallan, the insignificant girl from a backwater town. She was now Brightness Radiant, ostensibly from the Order of Else Callers. She'd persuaded Dalinar to pretend, in public at least, that Shallan was from an order that couldn't make illusions. She needed to keep that secret from spreading or her effectiveness would be weakened. The soldiers stared at her as if they expected her to grow shard plate, shoot gouts of flame from her eyes, and fly off to tear down a mountain or two. Probably should try to act more composed, Shallan thought to herself. More knightly? She glanced at a soldier who wore the gold and red of Hatham's army. He immediately looked down and rubbed at the Glyphord prayer tied around his upper right arm. Dalinar was determined to recover the reputation of the Radiance. But storms, you couldn't change an entire nation's perspective in a matter of a few months. The ancient knights Radiant had betrayed humankind, while many Alethi seemed willing to give the orders a fresh start. Others weren't so charitable. Still, she tried to keep her head high, her back straight, and to walk more like her tutors had always instructed. Power was an illusion of perception, as Yasna had said. The first step to being in control was to see yourself as capable of being in control. The scout led her into the tower and up a flight of stairs, toward Dalinar's secure section. "Brightness?" the woman asked as they walked. "Can I ask you a question?" "As that was a question, apparently you can."
"Oh, huh.
"It's fine. What did you want to know?"
"You're a radiant."
That one was actually a statement, and that's making me doubt my previous assertion.
"I'm sorry. I'm curious, Brightness. How does it work, being a radiant? You have a shard blade?"
So that was where this was going. "I assure you," Shallan said, "it is quite possible to remain properly feminine while fulfilling my duties as a knight." "Oh," the scout said. Oddly, she seemed disappointed by that response.
"Of course, Brightness."
Urethiru seemed to have been crafted straight from the rock of a mountain, like a sculpture. Indeed, there weren't seams at the corners of rooms, nor were there distinct bricks or blocks in the walls. Much of the stone exposed thin lines of strata, beautiful lines of varied hue, like layers of cloth stacked in a merchant's shop. The corridors often twisted about in strange curves, rarely running straight toward an intersection. Dalinar suggested that perhaps this was to fool invaders, like a castle fortification. The sweeping turns and lack of seams made the corridors feel like tunnels. Shallan didn't need a guide. The strata that cut through the walls had distinctive patterns. Others seemed to have trouble telling those apart and talked of painting the floors with guidelines. Couldn't they distinguish the pattern here of wide reddish strata, alternating with smaller yellow ones? Just go in the direction where the lines were sloping slightly upward, and you'd head toward Dalinar's quarters. They soon arrived, and the scout took up duty at the door in case her services were needed again. Shallan entered a room that only a day before had been empty, but was now arrayed with furniture, creating a large meeting place, right outside Dalinar and Navani's private rooms. Adolin, Renarin, and Navani sat before Dalinar, who stood with hands on hips, contemplating a map of Roshar on the wall. Though the place was stuffed with rugs and plush furniture, the finery fit this bleak chamber like a lady's hava fit a pig.
"I don't know how to approach the Azish, father," Renarin was saying as she entered. "Their new emperor makes them unpredictable."
"They're Azish," Adolin said, giving Shallan a wave with his unwounded hand. "How can they not be predictable? Doesn't their government mandate how to peel your fruit?"
"That's a stereotype," Renarin said.
He wore his Bridge IV uniform, but had a blanket over his shoulders and was holding a cup of steaming tea, though the room wasn't particularly cold.
"Yes, they have a large bureaucracy. A change in government is still going to cause upheaval. In fact, it might be easier for this new Azish emperor to change policy, since policy is well-defined enough to change."
"I wouldn't worry about the Azish," Navani said, tapping her notepad with a pen, then writing something in it. "They'll listen to reason.
They always do.
What about Tukar and Emul? I wouldn't be surprised if that war of theirs is enough to distract them, even from the return of the desolations."
Dalinar grunted, rubbing his chin with one hand.
"There's that warlord in Tukar. What's his name?"
"Tezim," Navani said. "Claims he's an aspect of the Almighty."
Shallan sniffed as she slipped into the seat beside Adolin, setting her satchel and drawing pad on the floor. "Aspect of the Almighty? At least he's humble." Dalinar turned toward her, then clasped his hands behind his back.
"Storms.
He always seemed so large, bigger than any room he was in.
brow perpetually furrowed by the deepest of thoughts. Dalinar Kolin could make choosing what to have for breakfast look like the most important decision in all of Roshar.
"Brightness Shallan," he said. "Tell me, how would you deal with the Makabaki kingdoms? Now that the storm has come as we warned, we have an opportunity to approach them from a position of strength. Aesir is the most important, but just faced a succession crisis. Imul and Tukar are, of course, at war, as Navani noted. We could certainly use Tashik's information networks, but they're so isolationist. That leaves Yazir and Leofor. Perhaps the weight of their involvement would persuade their neighbors?"
He turned toward her expectantly. "Yes, yes," Shallan said, thoughtful. "I have heard of several of those places."
Dalinar drew his lips to a line, and Pattern hummed in concern on her skirts. Dalinar did not seem the type of man you joked with.
"I'm sorry, Bright Lord," Shallan continued, leaning back in her chair. "But I'm confused as to why you want my input. I know of those kingdoms, of course, but my knowledge is an academic thing. I could probably name their primary export for you, but as to foreign policy, well, I'd never even spoken to someone from Alethkar before leaving my homeland. And we're neighbors."
"I see," Dalinar said softly. "Does your Spren offer some counsel? Could you bring him out to speak with us?"
"Pattern? He's not particularly knowledgeable about our kind, which is sort of why he's here in the first place." She shifted in her seat. "And to be frank, Bright Lord, I think he's scared of you."
"Well, he's obviously not a fool," Adolin noted.
Dalinar shot his son a glance.
"Don't be like that, father," Adolin said. "If anyone would be able to go about intimidating forces of nature, it would be you."
Dalinar sighed, turning and resting his hand on the map. Curiously, it was Renarin who stood up, setting aside his blanket and cup, then walked over to put his hand on his father's shoulder. The youth looked even more spindly than normal when standing beside Dalinar, and though his hair wasn't as blonde as Adolin's, it was still patched with yellow. He seemed such a strange contrast to Dalinar, cut from almost entirely different cloth.
"It's just so big, son," Dalinar said, looking at the map. "How can I unite all of Roshar when I've never even visited many of these kingdoms?" Young Shallan spoke wisdom, though she might not have recognized it. "We don't know these people. Now I'm expected to be responsible for them? I wish I could see it all."
Shallan shifted in her seat, feeling as if she'd been forgotten. Perhaps he'd sent for her because he'd wanted to seek the aid of his radiance, but the Kolin dynamic had always been a family one. In that, she was an intruder. Dalinar turned and walked to fetch a cup of wine from a warmed pitcher near the door. As he passed Shallan, she felt something unusual, a leaping within her, as if part of her were being pulled by him. He walked past again, holding a cup, and Shallan slipped from her seat, following him toward the map on the wall. She breathed in as she walked, drawing stormlight from her satchel in a shimmering stream. It infused her, glowing from her skin. She rested her free hand against the map. Stormlight poured off her, illuminating the map in a swirling tempest of light. She didn't exactly understand what she was doing, but she rarely did. Art wasn't about understanding, but about knowing. The stormlight streamed off the map, passing between her and Dalinar in a rush, causing Navani to scramble off her seat and back away. The light swirled in the chamber and became another larger map, floating at about table height, in the center of the room. Mountains grew up like furrows in a piece of cloth pressed together. Vast plains shone green from vines and fields of grass.
Barren, stormward hillsides grew splendid shadows of life on the leeward sides.
Stormfather.
As she watched, the topography of the landscape became real. Shallan's breath caught. Had she done that? How? Her illusions usually required a previous drawing to imitate. The map stretched to the sides of the room, shimmering at the edges. Adolin stood up from his seat, crashing through the middle of the illusion somewhere near Carbranth. Wisps of stormlight broke around him, but when he moved, the image swirled and neatly reformed behind him.
How?
Dalinar leaned down near their section, which detailed the Reshi Isles.
The detail is amazing. I can almost see the cities. What did you do?
I don't know if I did anything, Shallan said, stepping into the illusion, feeling the stormlight swirl around her. Despite the detail, the perspective was still from very far away, and the mountains weren't even as tall as one of her fingernails. I couldn't have created this, Bright Lord. I don't have the knowledge.
Well, I didn't do it, Renarin said. The stormlight quite certainly came from you, Brightness.
Yes, well, your father was tugging on me at the time.
Tugging?
Adolin asked.
The Stormfather, Dalinar said. This is his influence. This is what he sees each time a storm blows across Roshar. It wasn't me or you, but us, somehow.
Well, Shallan noted, you were complaining about not being able to take it all in.
How much stormlight did this take?
Navani asked, rounding the outside of the new, vibrant map. Shallan checked her satchel. All of it?
We'll get you more, Navani said with a sigh.
I'm sorry for—
No, Dalinar said. Having my radiance practice with their powers is among the most valuable resources I could purchase right now, even if Hatham makes us pay through the nose for spheres.
Dalinar strode through the image, disrupting it in a swirl around him. He stopped near the center, beside the location of Urethiru. He looked from one side of the room to the other in a long, slow survey.
10 cities,
he whispered.
10 kingdoms. 10 oath gates connecting them from long ago. This is how we fight it. This is how we begin. We don't start by saving the world. We start with this simple step. We protect the cities with oath gates. The Voidbringers are everywhere, but we can be more mobile. We can shore up capitals, deliver food or soul casters quickly between kingdoms. We can make those 10 cities bastions of light and strength. But we must be quick. He's coming. The man with 9 shadows.
What's this? Shallan said, perking up.
The enemy's champion, Dalinar said, eyes narrowing. In the visions, Honor told me our best chance of survival involved forcing Odium to accept a contest of champions. I've seen the enemy's champion, a creature in black armor with red eyes, a parshman, perhaps. It had 9 shadows.
Nearby, Renarin had turned toward his father, eyes wide, jaw dropping. Nobody else seemed to notice.
Azmir, capital of Azir, Dalinar said,
stepping from Urethiru to the center of Azir to the west,
is home to an oath gate. We need to open it and gain the trust of the Azish. They will be important to our cause.
He stepped farther to the west.
There's an oath gate hidden in Shinovar, another in the capital of Babatharnam, and a fourth in far-off Ral Elorim, City of Shadows.
Another in Rira, Navani said, joining him. Yasna thought it was in Kurth. A 6th was lost in Aemia, the island that was destroyed.
Dalinar grunted, then turned toward the map's eastern section. Vaidenar makes 7, he said, stepping into Shallan's homeland. Thalen's city is 8. Then the Shattered Plains, which we hold.
And the last one is in Kolinar, Adolin said softly. Our home.
Shallan approached and touched him on the arm. Spanreed communication into the city had stopped working. Nobody knew the status of Kolinar. Their best clue had come via Kaladin's Spanreed message.
We start small, Dalinar said, with a few of the most important to holding the world. Aesir, Yakaved, Thelena. We'll contact other nations, but our focus is on these 3 powerhouses. Aesir for its organization and political clout. Thelena for its shipping and naval prowess. Yakaved for its manpower. Brightness Tavar, any insight you could offer into your homeland and its status following the civil war would be appreciated.
And Kolinar? Adolin asked. A knock at the door interrupted Dalinar's response. He called admittance, and the scout from before peeked in.
Bright Lord, she said, looking concerned. There's something you need to see.
What is it, Lynn?
Bright Lord, sir, there's been another murder.